By the time they turned onto the Hempstead Road, the humidity had returned, and with a vengeance. John felt as if his own t-shirt had turned into a clammy mass of cobweb clinging to his chest and back. The sky, now turning a delicate shade of evening primrose, was still clear, but he felt that if he'd had a straw, he could have drunk directly from the air. There was only one other house on the road at the foot of the long hill with the Hempstead place at the top. As they drove past it, John saw the silhouette of a woman standing motionless at one of the windows and looking out at them. "Well, there's your friend Millie's great-aunt," John said. "She sure was a sport to call the local crazies down at the general store and tell them we were coming. I wonder if they would have dragged out the whoopee cushions and joy buzzers and chattery teeth if we'd stayed a little longer." "That dog had his own built-in joy buzzer," John laughed and nodded. 5 minutes later, they were turning into their own driveway. It was badly overgrown with weeds and dwarf bushes, and John intended to take care of that little situation before the summer got much older. The Hempstead place itself was a rambling country farmhouse, added to by succeeding generations whenever the need, or maybe just the urge, to do some building happened to strike. A barn stood behind it, connected to the house by 3 rambling zigzag sheds. In this flush of early summer, 2 of the 3 sheds were almost buried in fragrant drifts of honeysuckle. It commanded a gorgeous view of the town, especially on a clear night like this one. John wondered briefly just how it could be so clear when the humidity was so high. Elise joined him in front of the car, and they stood there for a moment, arms around each other's waists, looking at the hills which rolled gently off in the direction of Augusta, losing themselves in the shadows of evening. "It's beautiful," she murmured. "And listen," he said. There was a marshy area of reeds and high grass 50 yards or so beyond the barn, and in it a chorus of frogs sang and thumped and snapped the elastics God had, for some reason, stretched in their throats. "Well," she said, "the frogs are all present and accounted for anyway." "No toads, though." He looked up at the clear sky, in which Venus had now opened her coldly burning eye. "There they are, Elise, up there, clouds of toads." She giggled. "Tonight, in the small town of Willow," he intoned, "a cold front of toads met a warm front of newts, and the result was..." She elbowed him. "You," she said, "let's go in." They went in, and did not pass go, and did not collect $200. They went directly to bed. Elise was startled out of a satisfying drowse an hour or so later by a thump on the roof. She got up on her elbows. "What was that, Johnny?"
"Hose,"
John said, and turned over on his side. "Toads," she thought, and giggled. But it was a nervous giggle. She got up and went to the window, and before she looked for anything which might have fallen on the ground, she found herself looking up at the sky. It was still cloudless, and now shot with a trillion spangled stars. She looked at them, for a moment hypnotized by their simple, silent beauty. Thud. She jerked back from the window and looked up at the ceiling. Whatever it was, it had hit the roof just overhead. "John, Johnny, wake up!"
"Huh? What?"
He sat up, his hair all tangled tufts and clock springs. "It started," she said, and giggled shrilly. "The rain of the frogs!"
"Toads," he corrected. "Ellie, what are you talking about?" Thud, thud.
He looked around, then swung his feet out of bed. "This is ridiculous," he said softly and angrily. "What do you mean?" Thud, crash! There was a tinkle of glass downstairs. "Oh, goddamn," he said, getting up and yanking on his blue jeans. "Enough! This is just fucking enough!" Several soft thuds hit the side of the house and the roof. She cringed against him, frightened now. "What do you mean?" "I mean that crazy woman and probably the old man and some of their friends are out there throwing things at the house," he said. "And I'm going to put a stop to it right now. Maybe they've held on to the custom of chivalrying the new folks in this little town, but—" Thud! Smash! From the kitchen. "God damn!" John yelled and ran out into the hall. "Don't leave me!" Elise cried and ran after him. He flicked up the hallway light switch before plunging downstairs. Soft thumps and thuds struck the house in an increasing rhythm, and Elise had time to think. How many people from town are out there? How many does it take to do that? And what are they throwing? Rocks wrapped in pillowcases? John reached the foot of the stairs and went into the living room. There was a large window in there, which gave on the same view which they had admired earlier. The window was broken. Shards and splinters of glass lay scattered across the rug. He started toward the window, meaning to yell something at them about how he was going to get his shotgun.
Then he looked at the broken glass again, remembered that his feet were bare, and stopped. For a moment he didn't know what to do. Then he saw a dark shape lying in the broken glass. The rock one of the imbecilic interbred bastards had used to break the window, he assumed, and he saw red. He might have charged to the window anyway, bare feet or no bare feet, but just then, the rock twitched. That's no rock, he thought. That's a...
John?
Elise asked. The house rang with those soft thuds now. It was as if they were being bombarded with large, rotten, soft hailstones.
John, what is it?
A toad, he said stupidly. He was still looking at the twitching shape in the litter of broken glass, and spoke more to himself than to his wife. He raised his eyes and looked out the window. What he saw out there struck him mute with horror and incredulity. He could no longer see the hills of the horizon. Hell, he could barely see the barn, and that was less than 40 feet away. The air was stuffed with falling shapes. 3 more of them came in through the broken window. One landed on the floor, not far from its twitching mate. It came down on a sharp sliver of window glass, and black fluid burst from its body in thick ropes. Elise screamed. The other two caught in the curtains, which began to twist and jerk as if in a fitful breeze. One of them managed to disentangle itself. It struck the floor and then hopped toward John. He groped at the wall with a hand which felt as if it were no part of him at all. His fingers stumbled across the light switch and flipped it up. The thing hopping across the glass-littered floor toward him was a toad. But it was also not a toad. Its green-black body was too large, too lumpy. Its black and gold eyes bulged like freakish eggs, and bursting from its mouth, unhinging the jaw, was a bouquet of large, needle-sharp teeth. It made a thick croaking noise and bounded at John as if on springs. Behind it, more toads were falling in through the window. The ones which struck the floor had either died outright or been crippled, but many others, too many others, used the curtains as a safety net and tumbled to the floor unharmed. "Get out of here!" John yelled to his wife, and kicked at the toad, which, it was insane, but it was true, was attacking him. It did not flinch back from his foot, but sank that mouthful of crooked needles first over and then into his toes. The pain was immediate, fiery, and immense. Without thinking, he made a half-turn and kicked the wall as hard as he could. He felt his toes break, but the toad broke as well, splattering its black blood onto the wainscoting in a half-circle like a fan. His toes had become a crazy road sign, pointing in all directions at once. Elise was standing frozen in the hall doorway. She could now hear window glass shattering all over the house. She had put on one of John's T-shirts after they had finished making love, and now she was clutching the neck of it with both hands. The air was full of ugly, croaking sounds. "Get out, Elise!" John screamed. He turned, shaking his bloody foot. The toad which had bitten him was dead, but its huge and improbable teeth were still caught in his flesh like a tangle of fish hooks. This time, he kicked at the air like a man punting a football, and the toad finally flew free. The faded living room carpet was now covered with bloated, hopping bodies, and they were all hopping at them. John ran to the doorway. His foot came down on one of the toads and burst it open. His heel skidded in the cold jelly which popped out of its body, and he almost fell. Elise relinquished her death grip on the neck of her T-shirt and grabbed him. They stumbled into the hall together, and John slammed the door, catching one of the toads in the act of hopping through. The door cut it in half. The top half twitched and juddered on the floor, its toothy, black-lipped mouth opening and closing, its black and golden pop-eyes goggling at them. Elise clapped her hands to the sides of her face and began to wail hysterically. John reached out to her. She shook her head and cringed away from him, her hair falling over her face. The sound of the toads hitting the roof was bad, but the croakings and chirpings were worse, because these latter sounds were coming from inside the house and all over the house. He thought of the old man sitting on the porch of the General Mercantile in his rocker, calling after them, "Might want to close your shutters." Christ, why didn't I believe him? And on the heels of that, how was I supposed to believe him? Nothing in my whole life prepared me to believe him. And below, the sound of toads thudding onto the ground outside and toads squashing themselves to guts and goo on the roof, he heard a more ominous sound. The chewing, splintering sound of the toads in the living room starting to bite their way through the door. He could actually see it settling more firmly against its hinges as more and more toads crowded their weight against it. He turned around and saw toads hopping down the main staircase by the dozens. "Elise!" he grabbed at her. She kept shrieking and pulling away from him. A sleeve of the T-shirt tore free. He looked at the ragged chunk of cloth in his hand with perfect stupidity for a moment and then let it flutter down to the floor. "Elise! God damn it!" She shrieked and drew back again. Now the first toads had reached the hall floor and were hopping eagerly toward them. There was a brittle tinkle as the fan light over the door shattered. The toad whizzed through it, struck the carpet, and lay on its back, mottled pink belly exposed, webbed feet twitching in the air. He grabbed his wife and shook her. "We have got to go down cellar! We'll be safe in the cellar!" "No!" Elise screamed at him. Her eyes were giant floating zeros, and he understood she was not refusing his idea of retreating to the cellar, but refusing everything. There was no time for gentle measures or soothing words. He bunched the front of the shirt she was wearing in his fist and yanked her down the hall like a cop dragging a recalcitrant prisoner to a squad car. One of the toads, which had been in the vanguard of those hurrying down the stairs, leaped gigantically and snicked its mouthful of darning needles shut around a chunk of space occupied by Elise's bare heel a second before. Halfway down the hall, she got the idea and began to come with him of her own accord. They reached the door. John turned the knob and yanked it, but the door wouldn't move. "God damn!" he cried and yanked it again. No good. Nothing. "John, hurry!" She looked back over her shoulder and saw toads flooding down the hall toward them, taking huge, crazy sprawlings over each other's backs, falling on each other, striking the faded Rambler Rose wallpaper, landing on their backs and being overrun by their mates. They were all teeth and gold-black eyes and heaving, leathery bodies. "John, please! Please!" Then one of them leaped and battened on her left thigh just above the knee. Elise screamed and seized it, her fingers punching through its skin and into its dark liquid workings. She tore it free, and for a moment, as she raised her arms, the horrid thing was right in front of her eyes, its teeth gnashing like a piece of some small but homicidal factory machine. She threw it as hard as she could. It cartwheeled in the air and then splattered against the wall just opposite the kitchen door. It did not fall, but stuck fast in the glue of its own guts. "John! Oh, Jesus, John!" John Graham suddenly realized what he was doing wrong. He reversed the direction of his effort, pushing the door instead of pulling it. It flew open, almost spilling him forward and down the stairs, and he wondered briefly if his mother had had any kids that lived. He flailed at the railing, caught hold of it, and then Elise almost knocked him down again, bolting past him and down the stairs, screaming like a fire bell in the night. "Oh, she's gonna fall! She can't help but fall! She's gonna fall and break her neck!" But somehow she did not. She reached the cellar's earth floor and collapsed in a sobbing heap, clutching at her torn thigh. Toads were leaping and hopping in through the open cellar doorway. John caught his balance, turned, and slapped the door shut. Several of the toads, caught on their side of the door, leaped right off the landing, struck the stairs, and fell through the spaces between the risers. Another took an almost vertical leap straight up, and John was suddenly shaken by wild laughter. A sudden bright image of Mr. Toad of Toad Hall on a pogo stick instead of in a motor car had come to him. Still laughing, he balled his right hand into a fist and punched the toad dead center in its pulsing, flabby chest at the top of its leap, while it hung in perfect equilibrium between gravity and its own expended energy. It zoomed off into the shadows, and John heard a soft bonk as it struck the furnace. He scrabbled at the wall in the dark, and his fingers found the raised cylinder, which was the old-fashioned toggle light switch. He flipped it, and that was when Elise began to scream again. A toad had gotten tangled in her hair. It croaked and twisted and turned and bit at her neck, rolling itself into something which resembled a large, misshapen curler. Elise lurched to her feet and ran in a large circle, miraculously avoiding a tumble over the boxes which had been stacked and stored down here. She struck one of the cellar's support posts, rebounded, then turned and banged the back of her head twice, briskly, against it. There was a thick gushing sound, a squirt of black fluid, and then the toad fell out of her hair, tumbling down the back of her T-shirt, leaving dribbles of ichor. She screamed, and the lunacy in that sound chilled John's blood. He half ran, half stumbled down the cellar stairs, and enfolded her in his arms. She fought him at first, and then surrendered. Her screams gradually dissolved into steady weeping. Then, over the soft thunder of the toads striking the house and the grounds, they heard the croaking of the toads which had fallen down here. She drew away from him, her eyes shifting wildly from side to side in their shiny white sockets. "Where are they?" she panted. Her voice was hoarse, almost a bark, from all the screaming she had done. "Where are they, John?" But they didn't have to look. The toads had already seen them and came hopping eagerly toward them. The Grahams retreated, and John saw a rusty shovel leaning against the wall. He grabbed it and beat the toads to death with it as they came. Only one got past him. It leaped from the floor to a box, and from the box it jumped at Elise, catching the cloth of her shirt in its teeth and dangling there between her breasts, legs kicking. "Stand still!" John barked at her. He dropped the shovel, took two steps forward, grabbed the toad, and hauled it off her shirt. It took a chunk of cloth with it. The cotton strip hung from one of its fangs as it twisted and pulsed and wriggled in John's hands. Its hide was warty, dry but horribly warm and somehow busy. He snapped his hands into fists, popping the toad. Blood and slime squirted out from between his fingers. Less than a dozen of the little monsters had actually made it through the cellar door, and soon they were all dead. John and Elise clung to each other, listening to the steady rain of toads outside. John looked over at the low cellar windows. They were packed and dark, and he suddenly saw the house as it must look from the outside, buried in a drift of squirming, lunging, leaping toads. "We've got to block the windows," he said hoarsely. "Their weight is going to break them, and if that happens, they'll pour in." "With what?" Elise asked in her hoarse bark of a voice. "What can we use?" He looked around and saw several sheets of plywood, elderly and dark, leaning against one wall. "Not much, perhaps, but something." "That," he said. "Help me break it up into smaller pieces." They worked quickly and frantically. There were only four windows in the cellar, and their very narrowness had caused the panes to hold longer than the larger windows upstairs had done. They were just finishing the last when they heard the glass of the first shatter behind the plywood. But the plywood held. They staggered into the middle of the cellar again, John limping on his broken foot. From the top of the stairway came the sound of the toads eating their way through the cellar door. "What do we do if they eat all the way through it?" Elise whispered. "I don't know," he said. And that was when the door of the coal chute, unused for years but still intact, suddenly swung open under the weight of all the toads which had fallen or hopped into it, and hundreds of them poured out in a high-pressure jet. This time Elise could not scream. She had damaged her vocal cords too badly for that. It did not last long for the Grahams in the cellar after the coal chute door gave way, but until it was over, John Graham screamed quite adequately for both of them. By midnight, the downpour of toads and willow had slackened off to a mild, croaking drizzle. At 1:30 in the morning, the last toad fell out of the dark, starry sky, landed in a pine tree near the lake, hopped to the ground, and disappeared into the night. It was over for another 7 years. Around 5:15, the first light began to creep into the sky and over the land. Willow was buried beneath a writhing, hopping, complaining carpet of toads. The buildings on Main Street had lost their angles and corners. Everything was rounded and hunched and twitching. The sign on the highway, which read, "Welcome to Willow, Maine, the friendly place," looked as if someone had put about 30 shotgun shells through it. The holes, of course, had been made by flying toads. The sign in front of the General Mercantile, which advertised Italian sandwiches, pizzas, groceries, fishing licenses, had been knocked over. Toads played leapfrog on and around it. There was a small toad convention going on atop each of the gas pumps at Donny Sunoco. Two toads sat upon the slowly swinging iron arm of the weather vane atop the Willow stove shop, like small misshapen children on a merry-go-round. At the lake, the few floats which had been put out this early... Only the hardiest swimmers dared the waters of Lake Willow before July 4th, however, toads or no toads, were piled high with toads, and the fish were going crazy with so much food almost within reach. Every now and then there was a plip-plip sound, as one or two of the toads jostling for space on the floats were knocked off, and some hungry trout or salmon's breakfast was served. The roads in and out of town, there were a lot of them for such a small town, as Henry Eden had said, were paved with toads. The power was out for the time being. Free-falling toads had broken the power lines in any number of places. Most of the gardens were ruined, but Willow wasn't much of a farming community anyway. Several people kept fairly large dairy herds, but they had all been safely tucked away for the night. Dairy farmers in Willow knew all about rainy season and had no wish to lose their milkers to the hordes of leaping carnivorous toads. What in the hell would you tell the insurance company? As the light brightened over the Hempstead place, it revealed drifts of dead toads on the roof, rain gutters which had been splintered loose by dive-bombing toads, a dooryard that was alive with toads. They hopped in and out of the barn. They stuffed the chimneys. They hopped nonchalantly around the tires of John Graham's Ford and sat in croaking rows on the front seat like a church congregation waiting for the services to start. Heaps of toads, mostly dead, lay in drifts against the building. Some of these drifts were 6 feet deep. At 6:05, the sun cleared the horizon, and as its rays struck them, the toads began to melt. Their skins bleached, turned white, then appeared to become transparent. Soon a vapor, which gave off a vaguely swampy smell, began to trail up from the bodies, and little bubbly rivulets of moisture began to course down them. Their eyes fell in or fell out, depending on their positions when the sun hit them. Their skins popped with an audible sound, and for perhaps 10 minutes it sounded as if champagne corks were being drawn all over Willow. They decomposed rapidly after that, melting into puddles of cloudy white schmeg that looked like human semen. This liquid ran down the pitches of the Hempstead Place's roof in little creeks and dripped from the eaves like pus. The living toads died, the dead ones simply rotted to that white fluid. It bubbled briefly and then sank slowly into the ground. The earth sent up tiny ribbons of steam, and for a little while every field in Willow looked like the site of a dying volcano. By 7:15 it was over, except for the repairs, and the residents were used to them. It seemed a small price to pay for another 7 years of quiet prosperity in this mostly forgotten Maine backwater. At 8:05, Laura Stanton's beat-to-shit Volvo turned into the dooryard of the General Mercantile. When Laura got out, she looked paler and sicker than ever. She was sick, in fact. She still had the 6-pack of Dawson's Ale in one hand, but now all the bottles were empty. She had a vicious hangover. Henry Eden came out on the porch. His dog walked behind him. "Get that mutt inside, or I'm going to turn right round and go home," Laura said from the foot of the stairs. "He can't help passing gas, Laura." "That doesn't mean I have to be around when he lets rip," Laura said. "I mean it now, Henry. My head hurts like a bastard, and the last thing I need this morning is listen to that dog play Hail Columbia out of its asshole." "Go inside, Toby," Henry said, holding the door open. Toby looked up at him with wet eyes as if to say, "Do I have to? Things were just getting interesting out here." "Go on now," Henry said. Toby walked back inside and Henry shut the door. Laura waited until she heard the latch snick shut and then she mounted the steps. "Your sign fell over," she said, handing him the carton of empties. "I got eyes, woman," Henry said. He was not in the best temper this morning himself. Few people in Willow would be. Sleeping through a rain of toads was a goddamn hard piece of work. Thank God it only came once every 7 years, or a man would be apt to go shit out of his mind. "You should have taken it in," she said. Henry muttered something she didn't quite catch. "What was that?" "I said we should have tried harder," Henry said defiantly. "They was a nice young couple. We should have tried harder." She felt a touch of compassion for the old man in spite of her thudding head, and laid a hand on his arm. "It's the ritual," she said. "Well, sometimes I just feel like saying, frig the ritual." "Henry." She drew her hand back, shocked in spite of herself. But he wasn't getting any younger, she reminded herself. The wheels were getting a little rusty upstairs, no doubt. "I don't care," he said stubbornly. "They seemed like a real nice young couple. You said so too, and don't try to say you didn't." "I did think they were nice," she said. "But we can't help that, Henry. Why, you said so yourself just last night." "I know," he sighed. "We don't make 'em stay," she said. "Just the opposite. We warn them out of town. They decide to stay themselves. They always decide to stay. They make their own decision. That's part of the ritual, too." "I know," he repeated. He drew a deep breath and grimaced. "I hate the smell afterward. Whole goddamn town smells like clabbered milk." "It'll be gone by noon, you know that." "Yeah, but I just about hope I'm underground when it comes around again, Laura. And if I ain't, I hope somebody else gets the job of meeting whoever comes just before rainy season. I like being able to pay my bills when they come due just as well as anybody else. But I tell you, a man gets tired of toads. even if it is only once every 7 years. A man can get damn tired of toads. A woman, too, she said softly. Well, he said, looking around with a sigh, I guess we might try putting some of this damn mess right, don't you?
Sure, she said. And you know, Henry, we don't make ritual. We only follow it.
I know, but... And things could change. There's no telling when or why, but they could. This might be the last time we have rainy season. Or next time, no one from out of town might come.
Don't say that, he said fearfully. If no one comes, the toads might not go away like they do when the sun hits them.
There, you see, she asked. You've come round to my side of it after all.
Well, he said, it's a long time, ain't it? 7 years is a long time.
Yes.
They was a nice young couple, weren't they?
Yes, she said again.
Awful way to go,
Henry Eden said with a slight hitch in his voice, and this time she said nothing. After a moment, Henry asked her if she would help him set his sign up again. In spite of her nasty headache, Laura said she would. She didn't like to see Henry so low, especially when he was feeling low over something he could control no more than he could control the tides or the phases of the moon. By the time they'd finished, he seemed to feel a little better.
Aya, he said. 7 years is a hell of a long time.
It is, she thought, but it always passes, and rainy season always comes round again, and the outsiders come with it, always two of them, always a man and a woman, and we always tell them exactly what's going to happen, and they don't believe it, and what happens, happens.
Come on, you old crock, she said. Offer me a cup of coffee before my head splits wide open.
He offered her a cup, and before they had finished, the sounds of hammers and saws had begun in town. Outside the window, they could look down Main Street and see people folding back their shutters, talking and laughing. The air was warm and dry, the sky overhead was a pale and hazy blue, and in Willow, rainy season was over. ¶¶